97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to The Art of Potential Show. As always, fantastic show in store today. And what we're going to be talking about is something we all deal with, which is transitioning. Whether you're transitioning from one job to another, or maybe from one marriage to another, or from being single to being married, or suddenly having children, or, you know, hopefully you don't suddenly have a child, but, you know, some of the other things that happen in our lives, transitions are very much a part of them. They often serve as rites of passage. And we have an expert here on transitions. Actually, she's an expert in many things. She's an executive coach, a motivational speaker, and just an all-around magnificent person. Please say hello to Sarah Levitt.
Thank you, Kristen. It's a joy to be here. Thank you.
You may remember Sarah because we did an awesome show last year on the topic of divorce, and you were doing a lot of divorce coaching at that time.
I was, yeah. I was primarily doing divorce coaching, actually, yeah.
But now it sounds like things have changed.
I would say they've shifted. Kind of shifted and bloomed.
Oh, we're blooming. We're growing.
We're growing and blooming, yes. Which is what I always hope for in my clients. So I like to say that I practice what I preach. So, yes, I was initially doing divorce recovery coaching. And that shifted and transitioned and bloomed into coaching kind of in a much broader sense. So people who typically come to me are in some way dissatisfied with their current circumstances. That can be the result of a transition, mm-hmm. or they're anticipating transition. So on the
career
front.
They
can see it coming. There's typically dissatisfaction professionally and or personally, and they want something to change,
yes.
but perhaps aren't sure what that is.
So that's interesting. They're not necessarily visionaries who are like, let's go, you know, let's knock it up a notch, as much as they are like, this ain't working. I'm not liking this. I want out. I want some type of shift. Help.
It's both of those things,
okay.
actually. So at a company level, I'm thinking of a CEO who came to me who said, look, my management team is not functioning cohesively and we're not able.
Help.
Help. Right. It's a help. It's a cry for help. We're not functioning cohesively and I need us to be more profitable.
Yes.
So that's a visionary. And individually, it could be that someone has a vision for the life that they want or wanted and have kind of lost their way from it.
And it ain't happening.
And it ain't happening. So it's, you know, kind of realigning,
yes.
Realigning them, helping them to kind of realign with themselves and their core values, and then crafting a very nuts and bolts strategy for making that happen.
All right. So let's break this down. Let's say that I'm coming to you. And I'm coming to you because my life is just not working. I just, in terms of not working, I was supposed to be, I don't know, who's some famous thing, and it just didn't happen. So what are you going to do? How are you going to help me? Why am I going to hire you?
Why me? The first thing I'm going to do is listen hard.
Yes.
And quietly and independently. In other words, I'm really listening for what it is you want and why you want it.
So the why is as important as what you want.
It really is.
Oh, I agree. I think that's very important to know why you want what you want.
Oftentimes we think that a change in circumstance is going to change our happiness. And certainly sometimes that is the case.
That's why I go to the mall.
For example.
It's a short but happy experience.
Absolutely. So sometimes that change in circumstance can make a big difference in our happiness. If we are, for example, working in a career path that's not aligned with our core values, changing that can make a big difference.
Yep.
Oftentimes, however, we think a change in circumstance is really going to change our baseline happiness.
Yep.
When there are other things that we can do internally first. I'm getting the nod over there, that we can do internally first that really change our happiness. And then our circumstances shift from there.
All right. So what I hear you saying is you got to change the inside before you go changing the outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Yeah, darn. Yeah.
We're still waiting for that pill that we can take that will do all the work for us. So what are some things that we have to change on the inside? What would be some of the core things that you would commonly see with your clients?
I would say the first is, and this is going to sound obvious, but oftentimes my clients know what they want but don't want to know it.
Ooh.
So, for example, someone might have worked very successfully, financially successfully, and been, you know, really well rewarded for that, only to arrive at a point in their lives to say, wow, there's nothing here that I kind of want. there isn't the meaning and purpose and fulfillment that I want.
And you can't buy that at a mall.
Darn it. It doesn't come off the shelf. So that person could know exactly what they want but don't want to know
it. They're not quite ready. Because then you have to like say, well, I guess I really don't want to be working at this company and making this money and doing this. I mean, of course you want to be making that money, but you don't want to necessarily be doing that job, which you might have poured so much of your life energy into.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And it could be. I've had many clients come to me thinking that they want a job change, if not a career change.
Yeah.
I'm talking about career transition, only to find that after we work together that the meaning and purpose that they're seeking can be found right where they are. It's a matter of shifting themselves. So it's not as if their core values are out of alignment.
Right.
It's that they can be finding it either in other ways outside of their...
For example, give me an example.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of a client, an executive vice president in the East Coast in a large company who worked very successfully for her career to find that when she arrived, there wasn't what she expected there. She really found fulfillment in mentoring and guiding others. And when I was listening to kind of—
Hard listening.
Yep. And again, independently, because yep. I don't have a stake in the answers.
Right.
And it can be lonely when you're in some kind of transition. You know,
very much so.
Other people in life kind of have a stake in the outcome.
That's true.
So this person, as I was listening, it was clear that she really found meaning and purpose in giving back and thought that she had to change careers. Long story short, a lot of that she found right where she was. She began creating a mentorship program where senior leaders were mentoring junior leaders, spearheaded that.
Oh, it's a win-win.
Yeah, total
win-win. I hear lots
of win-wins
here.
Total win-win. So there wasn't this enormous overhaul that actually had to happen.
Well, and I think a lot of people look at change that way because I do think sometimes there are, when we grow up, there often are massive shifts that happen. You go from elementary school to middle school. That's a fairly massive shift with an influx of new people, an influx of new responsibilities and opportunities and things like that. You graduate from high school, you go to college, another huge transition. Then you go to college, graduate, hopefully, into the workforce, another massive transition.
Absolutely.
Of responsibility. Yeah. So I understand why we have this mindset that all transitions have to be big.
We also, I think, have the mindset as adults that transition, it's interesting you use the examples you did, thank you, about, you know, kind of kids as we come up into adulthood. I think as adults, we often have the mindset that transition is for our younger years. And if we think about it—
Unless you're thinking about retiring and then you're not thinking about your younger— Well, not that I would ever think about that.
I just actually wrote an article for Lawyers Mutual in which I was talking about this. You know, life really is transition. It's a series of transitions.
Yes.
So we, you know, have children and then they leave the nest. We might marry and then we might divorce and go from single to divorce to single again. We might change careers multiple times.
Yes.
We might go from being a solo practitioner to working collaboratively. I mean, life really is, even as adults, kind of full of change. And so what I hope to do, whether I'm speaking or coaching, is give people a dose of inspiration, certainly, but then give them the tools and techniques, essentially a toolkit for navigating change.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to find out what this toolkit is so that when we are all in the throes of change, we can just whip out these tools and make it all awesome. You're listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Hiemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Hiemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Sarah Lovett, who is a coach and a motivational speaker. And one of the things that she is talking about are the tools that we need in transition. So, Sarah, you were just saying that there's something called a toolkit. Please, please, please tell me what this is about.
Sure. And this is an amalgam of tools that I find, A, that I practice in my own life. So I try them out on myself first, certainly, and are backed up substantially by research in positive psychology. So the first, I would say, and I don't know that these are in order of importance, so I'm just going to kind of list them. But one that I find to be incredibly helpful in my own life and the lives of clients is the practice of gratitude. And I can speak about that quite a bit. The gratitude is shown really to be a fundamental underpinning of our happiness.
It is. It's shocking how much research is out there.
Shocking.
On it. It really is. It's like, wow.
I attend the Harvard Coaching Conference annually and belong to the Institute of Coaching, which is their arm there. And there's just, I mean, I'm shoulder deep in research there on gratitude. It does a couple of things. The practice of gratitude orients us, literally orients our brains toward the good stuff.
Yeah.
And we are hardwired as human beings to not be oriented that way, to be scanning the horizon for the negative all the time.
Well, that's fascinating because that makes total sense. I mean, you wake up in the morning and you're like, all right, what do I have to do today? As opposed to, well, what would I like to be thankful for today?
Yes. And in fact, it's interesting you mentioned that, one of the most effective simple practices is at the end of the day, particularly for adults with kids, is around the dinner table to do what we say, noticing and naming. So noticing the good stuff that happened and then kind of really savoring it.
Savor while you eat. Isn't that just so
little
perfect? Yeah.
And then even as an extension of that, what we did to get that. So a practice of gratitude orients us, kind of fundamentally orients us to the good stuff that's happening. And when we are in transition, it is a fundamental component of our happiness. In fact, I'm reading a book right now that gives the statistics on happiness, and it's overwhelming that 10% of our happiness is due to circumstance. And when people say that or hear that, they're kind of really surprised. But essentially, the external only determines 10% of our happiness.
Which, you know, one of the things I find so interesting is our nation is knee-deep in antidepressants, and yet we have more wealth than any other nation, collectively anyway, in the world. And it's just very interesting to me that we can be so rich in so many ways and yet somehow also need pills to help us recognize our happiness.
Yes. The remaining 40% is within our power and control, and that's where this toolkit comes in.
Yes.
So I would say tool number one, create some kind of gratitude practice. And that is noticing and naming, actively looking for the good stuff. It essentially makes a deposit into our well-being or happiness bank account, for lack of a better analogy.
I like that. And I'm just going to slide in here two things. One, I know of people who wake up before they even open their eyes in the morning. They either say a prayer of gratitude or they just start noticing and naming. And then we also had a person on a year or so ago, Heather Backer, and she was posting daily on Facebook her gratitude, but she said it forced her to do that. And then obviously at night.
Anytime.
Pick your time, but make it consistent, I think, is one of the main things.
Yes.
And you might forget to do it. Like when you brush your teeth.
It can be anytime. Right. It can be when you're having that cup of coffee.
Like, yeah, but then usually mine was always like, oh, I'm so grateful for my coffee. And I think you need to go a little beyond that.
No, that's fine, actually. It does a couple of things. One is it notices and names, makes that positive deposit, but it also keeps us in the present moment. Gratitude can also be what I call in three different time zones. So it can be kind of present, like, wow, I'm really enjoying this interview today. It's a lot of fun.
It's so much fun.
I'm grateful to have it, right? It can be reminiscent, like, wow, I loved that vacation I took with my family last year.
Oh, yes,
absolutely. Or it can be anticipatory. Right. I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. But the trick is, again, just orienting our brains and our thinking toward the good.
I love that. Okay, so that's tool number one, gratitude.
Yes. Exercise is another, again, research shows this, it's another fundamental underpinning of our well-being and happiness. It does a couple of things. One is it, you know, gives us all that good stuff like endorphins. It's often a rhythmic, soothing motion. So this is not kind of going out and running like a crazy person. You know, soothing, rhythmic motion is great. So a walk is fabulous. But regular exercise boosts our endorphins. It often gives us mastery over something, and we can see it improving. And it's shown to kind of give us the same result as if we were doing meditation, which is it clears our mind of the monkey chatter.
Yes.
The long to-do list and the worries and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So exercise or some type of practice where we can kind of get out of our heads for a little while.
Now, and I like what you said about, I'm just going to have to divulge this personal story because I typically exercise, but recently I tried to do this. It's an exercise called Zumba.
Yeah.
And first of all, I had no idea what I was getting into, which is why I took my child to Zumba, which you should never do because Zumba has moves children should not be doing. But also, just trying to keep up with the dance instructor introduced me to a whole new level of incompetence that I have. But it was fun for that because you had to come out of whatever you were thinking about and you had to watch where the hands and the feet and the jumping and all that kind of stuff were. Whereas in some of the other ones, like if you get on the elliptical machine, you can go, but you can also still stay in your to-do list.
Yes. So that's a great example. So it's, you know, exercise that kind of shifts you from that to-do list, gives you an endorphin boost, all, again, kind of an underpinning of happiness. Another, and I work with clients quite a bit on this, is awareness of our thinking and how we frame things for ourselves. So as we were talking about gratitude and noticing and naming the good, this is really critical.
I would imagine it is.
It's critical. So oftentimes we think we are only essentially limited by what we think possible. I don't know how else to say it.
No, that's very true that we are. We just tend not to think many things are. Anyway, keep going.
You know, I can't do this because, for example, I can't do this because what will everyone think? I can't follow my passion and earn a great living. I can't or I should or I have to. Those types of what we call limiting beliefs can exist often very, very quietly within our consciousness, but they're incredibly powerful. And we often hold them close, so close that when I ask a client, if I kind of hone in on what I'm hearing as a limiting belief and ask, you know, if, is that really the case? Is it really true that you can't follow your passion and, you know, earn a great living? Oftentimes the client will respond with, well, of course that's true, because the limiting belief has been held for so long. Sometimes they've been passed down.
Very often they've been passed down.
Legacy beliefs, right? So being aware of our thinking, and this is where coaching can really help, being aware of our thinking and then beginning to wiggle it loose. Beginning to shift our perspective.
So it doesn't just pop right out when you've announced that you have a limiting belief. Instead, you have to slowly kind of pull it out. And
oftentimes it is when I'm kind of chatting with a client and listening, it is it takes a little bit to get to. But I'm trained to listen.
Right. So what would be an example, like a concrete example of a limiting belief?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the example I just gave, actually. I can't follow my passion will everyone think?
Okay, so I can't, and by that, does the person mean quit my job and go try to do this other thing?
Sure, it could be that.
Okay.
It could be, I'm thinking of a client who was post-divorce and absolutely thriving, who was really conducting their life based on the belief that their best years were behind them. And this was a person who was absolutely full of life, vibrant, had everything in front of them, but believed that their best years were essentially behind them. That limits any action we take from there.
You know, that is so brilliant.
So it's the belief determines the action. You know, the belief creates the emotion, which then kind of creates the action.
Brilliant stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to learn more about how to be awesome. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to The Art of Potential Show. Having an absolutely fascinating interview with Coach Sarah Levitt. Sarah, we were just talking about the power of limiting beliefs, and you brought up this example of people believing that the best years were behind them and therefore kind of crafting their life around that.
Absolutely. And those limiting beliefs, and we all have them, myself included, those limiting beliefs can exist really quietly, almost as a whisper, I describe them, but they're kind of running the show. And so when we bring them to the light, when we have the awareness, we can then shift them. We can begin to change that belief. And again, going back to research, we now know that the brain is incredibly elastic and we can change the way we think.
I'm wondering if you could just like, you know, if you have a wrench, if you could just pop them out or I don't know, because I do think the limiting beliefs and I've seen it on multiple levels. I've seen it kind of as to your point, as folks get older, it's almost like a resigning of of fully engaging or looking forwards. And I've seen that. I've seen it, and I'll just use an example because I do a lot of college admissions things. People have this idea that college admissions works a specific way. And they say, well, if I don't get into such and such a school when I apply, then, you know, we're done. And it's like, no, there are so many different ways that people can go into different institutions. You can go part-time, you can transfer, you know, all these things. But it's like this, okay, you know, we're done now. So I would imagine you see a lot of that too.
Yes, like, that's a great example of a limiting belief. You know, there's only one way to do this.
Right.
And I can't. I can't is typically, that's a good trigger for listening for how we're thinking. You know, I can't is a kind of a marker for a limiting belief. There's only one way to do this. If I don't get into this school, XYZ won't happen.
You know? Well, yeah, you do see that. Like, you know, you're never going to be successful if you don't go to school X. Which really tends to be a school that your parents can talk about at a cocktail party.
So I encourage people.
Anyway, in addition, moving on.
I encourage people, in addition to changing their thinking, literally, we kind of turn that belief around to something that feels as true to them as the original belief.
Ooh, do you do this?
Yeah, I work with the client on it. So I'm thinking of a client who was concerned essentially they were not going to live their life to its greatest potential. Mm-hmm. And the belief that they had once we kind of got down to it was, I'm going to die with regret. And we worked together to create what we think of as a turnaround, which can be the opposite of that original thought. The trick is it has to feel to the person. It has to feel as believable. And I will throw out suggestions, get the client to give me suggestions. We turn this around to be, I'm going to die the captain of my ship. And I can tell when it feels right to a client, it just resonates.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, Sarah, that's it.
Right.
And then it's literally practicing, listening for the original belief. You know, I'm going to die with regret, for example. And when we hear that, filling in with the new belief, the new thought, I'm going to die the captain of my ship, and then looking for evidence to support it. Because believe it or not, we constantly look for evidence to support what we're thinking.
Oh, I believe that. I do that all the time.
We all do it.
I can train you on how to. I've worked with teenagers, and I've learned tricks from them that would just, I mean, they would wow the average person, the amount of evidence you can accumulate to support whatever idea
you have
at that moment.
Whatever you're thinking.
Right.
Yeah. And so if it's an I can't, we've often built up lots of evidence for that. So part of it is changing our thinking. The other part of this coaching that I like to do in terms of trying to get someone to shift within themselves, because that's all it is, right, is to
find... That's all it is. That's just a little shift.
It's a
little
shift.
Paradigm shift. They happen all the time.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing stuff. The other part of it is to find stories that match up with that new belief.
Okay. I have to go back to this big regret thing, though. When I think of someone regretting, I think of them regretting something or the loss of some dream or, like, mm-hmm. something specific as opposed to, like, general regret.
This, I think, was general regret. It was, I'm going to die essentially having not lived my life to its fullest. I'm going to kind of stay what I would, you know, call living in a corner of my life, kind of afraid to step outside of the box that I might have drawn for myself. And the new thought, I'm going to die the captain of my ship, really shifted this person.
Okay. All right. So
that's part of it, is the thinking. And then the other part, which I think is incredibly powerful, is to find stories that substantiate the new belief. So essentially, find stories of people who have done what you're trying to do on any level, whether that's, you know, be an effective leader or change careers or be more connected to your family and find the time for it, whatever that is. To find stories of hope and inspiration.
Well, and they give you a roadmap.
Absolutely.
Which is so important because you're like, oh, that's how that's done.
Yes, someone's been there, done that.
It's not magic.
Right. It's not magic. It's not abracadabra. Someone's been there and done that. They thought they could do it, and then they took action. They created a plan to get there. And so part of the toolkit, another tool that I think is incredibly important is to have someone – certainly this can be a coach. It can be a friend. It can be a mentor – to have
someone else.
Someone else. To hold the vision that you have for yourself and your life, because it will become obscured at times by fear. We will get lost. We all do. But to have someone to kind of hold that vision and remind you that it waits for you is incredibly powerful.
Well, that is a nice – I mean, that's like a real genuine, deep – relationship for someone to hold that vision.
Yes. Yes. So, and a coach, right? I mean, that's part of my role.
Oh, no. That would be a great person, a coach. That's why you hire Sarah.
Thank you. I mean, a coach can certainly do that. But yes, it would be a deep relationship with a mentor or a friend.
Somebody,
or perhaps a family member.
Yeah, because oftentimes I hear people who have these ideas and then something happens. They get sidetracked. You get sidetracked. You both end up on the same track going nowhere near the vision.
Yes, yes.
And bringing it back.
So that's powerful. That's an incredibly powerful part of the toolkit, is to have somebody hold the vision for you.
I love that.
Yeah.
So to find your vision, it seems to me like you have to do some personal vetting.
That's a great way to put it. Yes.
And how do you help clients do this? Because I would imagine we have a lot of people who have a lot of things they need to sort through.
Oftentimes, as I said at the beginning, we know what we want, but we don't want to know it because we don't think it's possible. We have a limiting belief in some way that we can't have it. So one of the things I'm doing is listening pretty hard for what clients are saying and what they want. And oftentimes people have a darn good sense. They're coming to me saying, I'm thinking of another client coming to me saying, you know, when I look at my history, when I graduated from college, that can often be a nice point to go to. When I graduated from college, you know, I really wanted to do something where I was contributing to society, helping people. I was thinking about this career, this career, this career, and then got sidetracked.
Yes.
So that can be
– I didn't get my first job. I had to work in this because it's the only place. So then I got married. Then I had children. Then I had another job that wasn't related to the first job, but – oh, wait. I'm sorry. We're talking about other people?
No. So, right. Yeah, life life happens.
Does.
And then we can kind of wake up and go, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm not kind of aligned. So part of it is me listening.
Yep.
Sometimes people are so kind of lost to themselves in terms of what it is that they want, that they really don't know what it is they want to do professionally. And part of that is just asking someone to tune into what it is they want on a basic daily level, getting them to kind of listen for what they want.
Okay, so you're teaching them to listen internally.
Listen to really tune in to what they want. And again, I'm listening pretty hard. And I'm also listening for people's core values so that they can align, and this is really important, you know, they can align their outside world with what matters to them internally.
Yeah.
So the outside reflects the inside.
Oh, absolutely.
When that is not aligned, that's where
causes
people,
a schism.
That's where people can feel dissatisfied.
Yes, because they're disconnected.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a break. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra. Please, please, please take a moment. Follow us on Twitter and you'll get all kinds of inspirational tweets and stuff. And then also give us a big thumbs up on Facebook.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential show, and I am talking with the wonderful Sarah Levitt. We are having a magnificent conversation, which you definitely want to be a part of, because we are talking about how to transition into magnificence. Sarah just outlined this amazing toolkit for us to use as we're transitioning through life. And Sarah, one of the programs you have right now, you're going to help me. I know magnificence is there. It is.
I'm actually working on a project called the Making Magnificence Project, Stories of Transition and Resilience. And I'm interviewing people across all different arenas and disciplines, people who have in some way transitioned and transformed. So someone who, for example, went from corporate life and was let go and started their company.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who became executive director of a nonprofit whose lifelong dream was to create that. Someone who, within a short span of a couple of years, lost their job, their mother, their brother, and
Ouch.
Had to relocate and completely
Ugh.
Reinvent themselves.
Someone
else, this is a great story, who went to law school because it's what he thought he should do, did very well, graduated, you know, magna, got out, was practicing law successfully in Boston, and slowly over a series of events realized that that nagging, gnawing feeling that he really wanted to be doing something else kind of, you know, percolated to the surface. And long story short, left his very successful position at this firm in Boston and went to Los Angeles to begin acting, which had been his dream. Again, he had done a little bit of it in college.
Yep.
Got out to L.A. and found that while he was a success there, which is kind of amazing.
Right.
He was doing commercial work and was, I think, getting some cameos. He realized, this isn't quite yet it either.
I
actually want to be doing Shakespeare on stage. Moved back east to New York, and I interviewed him at a time. You know, he was working these 12 to 15-hour long rehearsal days.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is essentially reinventing himself again.
Yep.
Stretching for that dream. And when I interviewed him, his production of St. Joan had just been named the best production, best play of the year by the Wall Street Journal. So that was pretty fantastic. But that iteration and evolution is often the case. And that's what the Making Magnificence Project is about. I'm talking to people about where they stumbled, you know, how they knew it was time to change, where they stumbled, how they chose to get back up, why they got back up, how they pursued things. And it's really exciting.
Let's talk a little bit about this, because one of the things that we haven't put a word on, which I do feel like comes up frequently, and it comes in the form, sometimes it gets called fear, but one of the underpinnings I do hear coming out is shame.
Mm-hmm.
Making a wrong choice, whether it's a partner, a career, or, you know, whatever other choice, or shame in leaving that. I mean, it almost sounds like we're more tied in to other people's thoughts about us, and maybe that's stifling us, even though other people would love us and they want us to do these amazing things. It's not that these people are thinking bad thoughts about us. It's more like we're projecting onto them. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. I mean, oftentimes we when we have the thought, what will everyone think? That everyone is typically a compilation of people in our lives. It's typically not one person, although it can be. But it's typically a compilation of kind of negative feedback that we've gotten. And we turn it into what will everyone think. And fear is that inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, what if I do this? What if I stretch and fail? And I often ask clients, what if you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if you do? Let's look at that. And where?
Oh, why? Why do you have to look at that?
Well, oftentimes it's, oh, I've stretched and failed, and then it turned into amazing success.
Okay.
So
long as you go there.
So often failure can be kind of the springboard to success.
Yeah. Well, and tied into that, too, another thing that's coming through loud and clear to me is I'm listening. Just want to point that out. Is you're talking about decisions, but they're core decisions. They're not decisions that you back away from. They're life decisions. And there's power in making a decision because, in a sense, you're closing something.
I think a couple of things. One is decisions can often present as either or. Yeah, I want to talk about a couple of things here. They can present as either or. I have to go left or right at this juncture. That's often the way we frame things. And I encourage clients to think not in terms of A or Z, but is there a middle ground?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to cut my budget here? Can I keep this number of staff and do this? So the middle ground can often be helped with an and as opposed to a but.
Yeah, but or an or,
And the other thing is we often frame things as really, really big. Like I have to make this career decision at this point in time. And oftentimes we don't. There is no urgency. It's something that we're creating within ourselves. That feeling can be oftentimes be overwhelming. So one of the things I do with clients is talk to them about taking whatever goal it might be, a deeper relationship with my spouse, with my children, more time for them and with them, greater leadership effectiveness, whatever that might be. And we break it down into the smallest actionable steps possible. Because oftentimes when we think of a goal, we get stifled and stymied because we make it too big.
Oh, yes, we do. And then there's a to-do list, which is too long to accomplish. So then you're defeated before you ever get started.
Yes, that's so well said. Yes. And in terms of, you know, decisions that have to be that are quote-unquote core decisions, I think as long as we're in alignment with ourselves and, you know, if we're part of a family unit, we're consulting the other people in our family and not kind of running renegade, that perfectionism often gets in the way.
Yes, it does.
Of feeling like we can make a decision. And again, making them smaller rather than larger. And biting off, you know, chewable bite-sized pieces is the way to go.
It really is. And the decision-making, there's something – I'm going to go back to this because there is power in making a decision. It's actually how we get power is to rule things in and out of our lives. But there's also a commitment that comes with a decision and a commitment to – be captain of our ship or to take care of our physical bodies the way we need to. Or it's and sometimes we're not good. I just want to go off on this tangent real quick. Sometimes we're not good at doing that for ourselves. And I'll give an example from my own life. I have this desire to be a certain weight. And it's easier for me to join a group. and to sign up to do some type of group activity than it is for me to sit there and say, okay, I'm going to do this for myself. And it shouldn't be that hard, but I do find that other people are of a similar mind.
And you, I'm guessing you get that support and camaraderie. Everybody's kind of aiming for the same goal.
Honestly, I really haven't, only because I do it at my gym and you weigh in, you weigh out and whatever. but there is something about being like, okay, well, I have to do this because it's this program I've signed up for.
And I've declared it, too.
I've declared it, yes.
I think it's also
the decision's been made.
It's the declaration.
Yes. Thank you for helping me because that's what I was trying to get at with decisions. Like, you know, if you decide to lose weight and then you're back at the Oreo section of the grocery store, decision was not really made.
It's in the declaring.
It was kind of fake made.
But that The weight of kind of making the decision, you know, I try to discourage clients from making the decision and kind of breaking things down into smaller smaller pieces.
Manageable parts.
Smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces, and finding success with those and then kind of growing from there.
Yeah, because now you're rocking it. You're like, yeah, I was successful there and I can do this. And you're looking, your gratitude. You're like, yeah, and that's what I did to be successful.
It builds on itself.
Absolutely.
It builds on itself.
Well, Sarah, if our folks want to reach out and talk to you, what do they need to do?
The best way to get in touch with me is through my website, and I can be reached at sarah@sarah-levitt.com.
We'll have it on the Art of Potential website, too.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a joy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. You have just listened to the Art of Potential show. Please do take a moment to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.